Evocative essays, scintillating stories, timely transcripts, even satisfying songs. All of these and more live on at steinonline.com for members of the Mark Stein Club. You've heard him on the radio and seen him on TV, but that is just the tip of the iceberg. From the Stein Online back catalog to exclusive access to Stein's new content, membership in the Mark Stein Club is a must-have for fans of America's undocumented anchorman. Tune in to Stein's nightly Tales for Our Time. Join the conversation in one of his fortnightly live Clubland Q&As, or sit back and take in a Sunday poem. Mark Stein Club members also get advance notice of Stein's live appearances. Join the Mark Stein Club now by heading to www.steinonline.com/club.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. April 23rd, 2025. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in... we're back to... Kiev now, aren't we? The romance of the war for all you people with the Ukrainian flag, Twitter avatars, that was all long ago now. 10:30 p.m. in Tehran for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone. 12:45 in Kathmandu for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, I'm sorry about that. 6 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, not in the least bit sorry, you should be up by now. 8 a.m. in Auckland, and an even more civilized hour for the Kippers and Kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific, if you're English and admit to it. Happy St. George's Day, also Shakespeare's birthday. Make the most of those while you can. Also, if you're English, King Wictred of Kent. Any King Wictred of Kent fans in the house? King Wictred of Kent died 1,300 years ago today, April 23rd in the year 725. He is best remembered for, well, he isn't remembered at all, is he? Because we're a present tense culture at war with our own past. But before we commenced burning down our civilizational inheritance, he was best remembered for the Law of Wictred, which enacted provisions against sinful matrimony. So Ilhan Omar, wife of her brother, and Letitia James, wife of her father, would not have prospered in such a society. It's great to be with you. I'm still in France and hope to be making my way back across the Atlantic somewhat cautiously commencing tomorrow. Before we get to your questions, I gotta say, I don't know whether we got any questions on this, but the one thing I am completely sick of is this stuff in the American papers doing this. It's basically book plugs, because all the people who lied to you for the past 4 years, now coming out with books saying, now at last it can be told. Remember that amazing spectacle with the first presidential debate last year, last summer, not that long ago, and suddenly everyone was shocked to find that dementia had been going on in the White House underneath their noses, and nobody had a clue about it. And now all the filthy, dirty, stinking, rotten liars like Jake Tapper and the these New York Times guys. So they figure, you know, okay, it was great. We were kissing up to the Biden administration, so-called, for 4 years, and then that went belly up. But there's still money to be made. Now we can do a tell-all book with lots of in-depth reporting, with people like Elizabeth Warren saying, well, I was a bit concerned when... I saw him, and he didn't seem to want to stay up with me till 3 a.m. talking about whether mine was the best recipe in the Cherokee cookbook. It's complete crap, all this. You know, I understand from the COVID and from the lockdowns and from the vaccines that one of the hardest things there, and actually climate change, one of the hardest things there is to get people to admit they've been suckered. I get that. I get that it's difficult to persuade, you know, it's not about being right or wrong. It's about saying I was played for a sap for years. But it's one thing to find it difficult to admit to being played for a sap. It's quite another to go and reward the guys who are suckering you by making them even richer. Jake Tapper should be broke. He should be living under a bridge. The media, this is the thing too. I've commented on this before. There's absolutely no point to fake responsible government. We're going to spend 2 years. We've had the midterms now, so we're going to spend the next 2 years talking about who's 2 points up in Iowa. And it doesn't matter because the people who do matter have decided that a brain dead husk is what suits them best. Because under the deals done by the Democrat power brokers, they'll all get a piece of the dead husk. They'll all get to use the auto pen one day a week for what happens to be their main concern. So a dead husk is exactly what they were looking for. Why on earth would you go to... Also, there's nothing to expose. Who Joe Biden was and what shape he was in was obvious. Here am I, over 5 years ago now. So I'm not, I'm shocked. A sudden outbreak of dementia in the Oval Office. Who could have seen that coming? Here am I, over 5 years ago, March 2020, back when all the other Democrat candidates for the presidential nomination, all of them, save Bernie Sanders, had dropped out immediately after South Carolina, and it was clear that Biden would be the nominee. This is the Mark Stein Show 5 years ago. When they're not demanding more abortions and funding for the Kennedy Center, what are the Democrats contributing to this debate? Let's check in with the president in waiting, Joe Biden, on tip-top form.
We have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what. No matter what. We know what has to be done.
Let's run that again, Mr. President-to-be. Quote, we have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what. No matter what. Gotcha. Yeah, that's Joe Biden in the first month of the COVID giving us his take on it. And he can't do it. And it's perfectly obvious he can't do it. And we used to have a regular feature way back then in which we would play this stuff that he couldn't actually do. He's talking about the COVID and he says, whatever he says, we have to find a cure. That will make it worse. It was perfectly obvious. That's the Mark Stein Show, March 25th, 2020, which is over 5 years ago. And now you're going to make all these talentless liars richer than they've ever been. Oh, I can't wait to get the inside dope telling me what happened to Joe Biden. Remember that G7 event a week or two before the first debate? He was on tip-top form there. He was full of energy. He had so much energy that he'd just wander off across the field in search of little girls whose hair he could sniff. He was on the top of his game. And then all of a sudden, it went south. And now I'd like the people who lied to me for the last bloody half decade to produce a best-selling book telling me what was going on all the time. They weren't telling me anything. Electoral politics is so stupid. I don't even know. I can hardly bear to talk about any, because it's the same. Canada having an election in 5 days time, you know, and Klaus Schwab's last gift to the world is getting a central banker of no fixed abode who has minimal interest in the country he's going to be prime minister of and absolutely no understanding of it. And if he loses, which the polls seem to think he won't be doing, but if he did lose, do you want to bet? You know, it's like Michael Ignatieff when he was Liberal Party leader. They parachuted him in as the glamour boy for the election. This is whatever it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And then the minute he lost the election, he buggered off out of Canada and hasn't been seen since. You know, I'm getting close to despair on some of this stuff. But one takes one's victories where one can. We're supposed to be excited about things like a Supreme Court declaring that a woman is a biological female. I think they're just messing with us on that and lots of other things. But let us get. I just wanted to get that off my chest. You know, it was perfectly obvious. And Tucker and I, going back even further, at the end of 2021, we did a Biden montage of all the bollocks. And now, Jake Tapper knows the inside track. You know, he was Joe Biden was on brilliant form, full of energy. He's never been better. Who's the guy on MSNBC, the morning guy, who said this is the best Biden he's ever been? Doug Cole says, "Hi, Mark. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice, even when you feel it is not up to full strength. As Klaus Schwabfinger scurries off like a cockroach into the crevices of his underground bunker, do you think there will be any repercussions for him? Or will he simply live out his life in Argentina like a fleeing Nazi, claiming he has been a simple small-town accountant his entire life?" I don't think he's going to be staying in Switzerland. The Swiss, interestingly, this is decades ago, denied him citizenship, which is interesting. Whatever it is the Swiss have on him, they're keeping it close to their chest. Keith Marsden says, "Now the evil Bond villain Klaus Schwab is gone for good, we hope. Mark, who do you think they've got planned for the Operation Destroy Humanity next? Sorry it's not cheerful, but I'm sure you can think of a few suspects." Well, the interim chairman has already been appointed. It's the guy from Nestle. I used to be quite a fan of Nestle's because when I was a little kid, I liked Nestles, as they used to say then, Nestles in certain countries, Nestles Milky Bar. I can probably even sing the jingle. The Milky Bar kid is strong and tough because only the best is good enough. The creamiest milk, the bite is strong. That's what. Oh, well, maybe I couldn't. Elisa Angel says, "How much justice or punishment can be handed to Klaus Schwab, the sinister Teutonic megalomaniac, hiding in plain sight as a sinister Teutonic megalomaniac?" That was the line we used to use. on the Mark Steyn Show, because he just said it. It's a brilliant thing. He in that sense, he was like Jimmy Savile. He just hid it in plain sight, because he the future does not just happen. The future is made by us. And then, just for good measure, he shook his fist. Or the bit where he was talking about, we penetrate the cabinets, until his own cabinet got penetrated. Elisa says he basically has one foot in the grave. I don't think that's true. Because I think he's the first transhuman in human years. Yes, he's 137, but he's done some kind of deal, or he's on some kind of thing where he's going to live forever, so he might come back and resume. Look, this has happened. These things happen. There's a picture of the three of them, Justin, Rishi, and Klaus at, I think it was the G20 in Indonesia, where they all wore special sort of Hawaiian-type shirts for the event. So so Rishi looks like Elvis in Fun in Acapulco, if you can imagine a diminutive and charisma-free Elvis. I guess that would make Klaus and Justin the Jordanaires. But the thing about it is, we're supposed to be excited because they're all now gone, because these guys outlive their usefulness. And so when Justin became a liability, they found a G7 central banker and parachuted him in. Rishi was useful to them when they wanted to get rid of Boris, because Boris has outlived his usefulness. And then Rishi outlived his usefulness. And it's a bit like celebrity. I once made, this is a point I made, you know, back in the 90s, and it's not a political point, but I was marveling at the way in pop culture the public can just shrug off these figures instantly. You know, one minute you're at the top of the hit parade and the next you're a nobody, and you're singing at the local sports bar and living in a council flat, as happened to, who was it? My sister went and... she knew one of those guys. The guys from The Suite, so-called Blockbuster. I think that was... Is it Blockbuster? I don't remember any... Anyway, they had big hits in the 70s and wound up in council flats. So did the Bay City Rollers. It's like that in politics too. They come and they go. They don't wind up... They're cannier than the Bay City Rollers, amazingly enough. So they don't generally wind up in council flats playing sports bars, because they've got all the lobbying and they've got all the speechifying, because, you know, that's a racket too. So people will pay millions of dollars, or did, to hear Bill Clinton's daughter give a speech on diarrhea in Africa. So the racket can still, but the whole idea is there's a churn, so that you feel the politics is worth following because there are plot developments, and that's, you know, you can argue about what appears to have done for Poilievre in the Canadian election, although the polls have tightened, as they did with Kamala, and for the same reason, as I said a few weeks ago, he had to have a short election campaign, because otherwise people would have time to figure out how unlikable Carney is. Unlikable. He's got no feeling for politics at all. Amazingly enough, he's just like Rishi Sunak in that respect. But the people come and go, because this is democracy in the West is like a long-running play after, you know, and when you go and see the play, when it opens, it's got Ian McKellen and Judi Dench in it. But it's now been running for 20 years, so it's got no-name losers in it, and they're not as good, and it's all just generally falling apart a bit. And that's what democracy is in its current iteration in the West. It's like a play that's been running too long, but they're keeping it going to give you the illusion that the show is worth seeing, and it's not. I mean, the interesting thing about Klaus Schwab, we were, you know, our show was one of the few that talked about the guy, but it is true that a lot of his, I mean, I don't believe this for a moment, because, by the way, the stuff about he's been putting his happy endings on the company credit card, because they all do that. Most of the people who make the decisions that impact your life never have to be bothered writing a personal check for anything. That's what's so... That's if you go back to Barney Frank complaining he's on the ferry going somewhere, he's on the somewhere out on Long Island, he's going to Fire Island or whatever it is to have a weekend of sport, and he's asked to pay the fare because he just gets on the ferry having come straight from Washington, and he's asked to pay the fare, and he does this don't you know who I am thing. What do any of these guys have to pay for? And so the wife who was on the payroll of the World Economic Forum organized events just for places she wanted to go and see for free. So, Klaus, darling, I was thinking it might be time to have a discussion on digital ID. What about if we were to hold a panel in Tahiti? And now she's stunned that they're coming after her for that, because everybody does that. Same thing with Klaus and getting the masseuses to come to his room. Everybody does that too. All these guys do. That's the world they live in. There's a world in where you've just seen it with the USAID. There's a world in which people live, that there are people who never have to get out the personal checkbook. And then there are others like you who have to pay for the people who never get out the personal checkbook. Our man Obsidian, possibly not his real name, says, so what's this? Schwab Sr. was caught with his hand in the cookie jar? If so, not an unusual event. Exactly. That's the point. The padded expense account is a feature of the lives of the rich and famous. Yes, it is. But do you know why? It's so when they need to get you, they can get you. Now to the looming Canadian federal election, says Obsidian. Is anybody else fuming over the fact that we lost our chance for regime change because of the disruption caused by the rampaging lout that now sits in the Oval Office? Carney and his libs are poised to win big next week, and this will mean the continuation of the Davos-inspired leadership we grew to love and cherish under Lil Justin. Brace yourself. You can make that argument. The thing about all those jokes about the 51st state and Governor Trudeau, they worked in America, but they didn't work in Canada. Unless you pick somewhere that's a sort of semi-colony like Greenland, they wouldn't work if you were to make the same crack about France. They wouldn't work if... I'm just talking about the G7 here. They wouldn't work if you made the same crack about Italy. They wouldn't work if you made the same crack about Japan. So in that sense... just to take it seriously, there was some stupid story today that they'd done a poll in Canada, and 15% wanted to be governed by Trump, and I whatever it was it 50 57% or something preferred to stick with the king. Or as the, it was a very bizarre, everything's illiterate these days. You think, well, this is a 200-year-old newspaper. They must have figured out after a couple of centuries how to write up these things. But they're all written by like 12-year-old interns on sub-minimum wage now. So they don't know. So the story was headlined, Canada would prefer to rejoin the British Empire rather than join America. Well, rejoin the British Empire. When exactly did they leave? 1867, British North America Act, 1931, Statute of Westminster, 1982, Patriation of the Constitution. When exactly did they leave the British Empire? They still have the same king. So I don't know. I don't. So it was a stupid story, but that 15% want to live under Trump in America seems to me about right, because whatever you think about it, Canadians, there's not a big MAGA constituency in Canada, and where there is, where there is, or where there might be a sort of similar sentiment, such as Alberta. Alberta should be a sovereign state on its own. All on its own. That's the way to go. You got a better shot. In the world we're moving into, you got a better shot in small countries. If you read anything on the size of nation, I mean, a lot of small countries are very agreeable, like Singapore. And I don't see, even if you wanted to throw off Canada, as Alberta increasingly does, unlike Quebec, then I don't see why you wouldn't just become an independent nation. They can certainly do that. This idea that nations have to be full of 500 million people is a relatively new one, and it certainly wasn't the case when nations were more agreeable. Peter says, g'day, Mark. Ah, possibly from Australia. If Davos Stooge Carney is elected in Canada by the Boomer Middle Finger Brigade, I'm hearing that Alberta may leave the dysfunctional Dominion. Dysfunctional. What did I used to say? The deranged Dominion. I think dysfunctional Dominion could apply to New Zealand and various other parts of the Commonwealth. That may be the best possible result, as a new chapter is needed for America's formerly friendly hat. What are your thoughts on that, please? You know, these big, essentially British settler nations, like Canada and Australia, were big because although there were regional differences, the citizenry as a whole agreed on the important things. If you don't agree on the important things, then small nations are healthier, and I'm in favour of that. I would regret, you know, as I said last week, I think, I miss the Canada I was born in. But they killed that. Then Justin came along and killed his dad's Canada too. I didn't care for that multi-culti Trudopia. But it was a thing, unlike Jason's Canada, which is just a huge suicidal nullity. Fred Jones says, Mark, oh, Canada, what's going on up there? Yes, I'm a Yank. Is the Carney Lib polling lead merely the Trump effect, or is there something more fundamentally awry up north? No, it's not just the Trump effect. There's an element of that that plays into it. But the main reason is because they got rid of Justin before the election. So it seems like the change that everyone wanted has already taken place. Most people pay little attention to elections, but they get that there's a Liberal Party headed by this new chap, and they get there's a Tory party headed by some other guy. And the new chap is a most mysterious figure. He can't say where he pays his personal taxes. Brian Lilly did a rather good column on this. It's, he's probably, he's probably switched it by now, but I would imagine that he was paying his taxes either in the UK or Ireland until Brian Lilly started asking questions about it. He's the 1-800 candidate. You know, he has no... He's an area code without an area, Mark Carney. But the fact is, if you're not paying attention, and oh yes, I know, it's all very confusing. Where does he pay his? Because he belongs to the world, so he's got 200 countries to. His company is in a British tax haven. It's in Bermuda. That's how much he loves Canada. He wants you, the schlub who can't move. You know, you own a feed store, or work in a coffee shop, and you can't move that business to Bermuda, so you have to pay the full whack of taxes. But Carney can move his business to Bermuda, where he pays. He's just, yeah, like I said, these men belong to everywhere and nowhere, and same with Rishi Sunak. There's a lot of that about. Fred goes on to ask whether what's more a right, but people deserve the government they get. You know, America, Trump was the last chance. Canada, this election is the last chance. The United Kingdom isn't going to make it, because by the time the next election's due, it'll be gone. France, Marine Le Pen was the last chance, so they've decided to put her in jail. Germany, the AfD is the last chance. So enough Germans were not willing to take a chance on that before the election. The new government has not yet taken office yet, this Fred Mertz guy. And already the AfD are in the lead. They're 2 points in. They were 1 point in the lead last week. Now they're 2 points in the lead in the latest poll. Okay, that's great. Maybe you should have thought about that before the election, you crout nitwits. You know, so looking at all this stuff, as I said, it's all the same. The year of total implosion may vary hither and yon. And the reasons for it, for example, Trump won the election convincingly, but he has the entire legal apparatus of the United States. And don't forget, the United States has more lawyers than the rest of the world combined. That's a lot of temporary restraining orders you can file right there. And they've determined they're going to destroy his second presidency as others destroyed the first. But Fred Jones makes the point that he thinks, is it the K-12 and college indoctrination that's so prevalent here in California? I believe all roads to Western decline lead back to the academy, where a secular religion has displaced Christianity and Judaism. Without a systemic change to compulsory elementary education and a serious credibility blow to our higher ed institutions, the West is toast. Your thoughts about Western education would be most appreciated. I said as much. What year was that? It's, let me see, a decade and a half ago, 2011, in my book After America, I discussed and I said that the biggest structural defect in the United States of America was the education system. It impacts everything. I don't believe, for example, when you notice when education is talked about, it's always about extending and prolonging it. You know, they say, well, oh, yes, there are problems, but what we need to do is to have universal PhDs for all, right? Which means that for the failure to give a people a sat. Don't forget, as always quote, in 1940, the average American had an eighth grade education. That's to say the majority of the country left school at 13. That's the America that won the Second World War. So people who wonder, oh, if it weren't for us, you'd be speaking German. Yeah, actually, it was the 8th graders who presided over that America. Now it's 28th grade America and the Afghan War, right? So, and there's a reason for that, because if you haven't taught, given people a basic education by 8th grade, you're not going to be able to do it by keeping them in school till 28th grade. And it has other impacts too. I mean, the biggest impact is this, that if you are able to finish your education by 13 or 16 or 18, or a compressed, effective area of scholarship that enables you to leave university with a bachelor's degree at the age of 21, at that point, you're a grown-up, and you do grown-up things like get married and have children and buy a house. And the more you prolong the bollocks of public education, oh, yeah, it's not 13 or 16 or 18. Now it's 27, 34, whatever. You prolong. People are surprised now that America has joined Europe in deathbed demographics. Well, why do you think that is? What kind of, it's one thing to complete your three-year bachelor's by the age of 21, and then to decide you're going to get married and buy your first house at 23 and have a couple of kids and whatever. The longer you leave it, the less likely that is to happen before you're 35, 40, whatever. So I'm not even talking about the Fred Jones calls the indoctrination here. I'm just talking about the fact that they can't even indoctrinate you in a timely fashion. You know, if they were to say, okay, we're going to finish the indoctrination by eighth grade, that would at least demonstrate an ability to have efficient, fast-tracked indoctrination. But the fact is, now it dribbles on into your late 20s and mid-30s. Like, who was the famous Kay Rush got into trouble for this? Because of her successful campaign to get the university to pay for free contraception. And she was 34, I think, that student. That student, still at school, 34, whatever her name was, is what healthy societies call early middle age. It's a huge structural defect, and unfortunately, people have gotten used to it, so that your productive working life is this increasingly shrinking space that fills the gap between prolonged lethargic varsity and earlier and earlier retirement. And that's the way they want to keep it, because they don't want you being out there being effective. Drew Weber says, hello, Mark. The World Economic Forum can be lumped. Oh, there's more on that in After America, by the way. 15 years old now. I've been too busy litigating to write anything anymore. Drew Weber says, hello, Mark. The World Economic Forum can be lumped with the likes of the Clinton Foundation and others, whose primary purpose is to allow its founders and their cronies to travel about in royalty class when their government or corporate expense accounts are terminated. Doge will fall well short of finding trillions to balance our budget. However, Doge serves a valuable purpose in shining a light on the rackets embedded and associated with our government. NGOs use mostly government money seemingly to feather the bed of retired politicians and their friends and families. Dubious research grants are handed out to universities, especially those outside of science and engineering. These fund make-work projects for professors who do minimal teaching, and for graduate students to put unnecessary polish on their undergraduate degrees. Keep the government academic complex thriving. Government funding of NGOs should stop completely, although not likely, as politicians from both sides of the aisle feed at the trough. Yeah, that's the point Elon Musk made a couple of months ago in the bright new dawn of Trump 47, when somebody complained on, why did you have to do this? It was only a couple of million he was getting. That's nothing given all the deficit and debt and the trillions and billions. No, but the point is to stop people living like this and thinking like this. This idea that you can just come to Washington and serve a couple of years as the deputy assistant undersecretary of whatever, and you'll be set up for life. In the way all these names, the people who used to defend Clinton during the Clinton era, are all still around in Washington, only now they're heading up NGOs for this and that. What was the guy? Miliband. There's one Miliband who's still in the British government. The other Miliband went to New York, and he's now heading up some bollocks NGO that was on the take from USAID. People, you know, I said if you own a feed store, because I was giving an example, you know, in my part of northern New Hampshire. That's not a particularly ridiculous comparison. You're not going to retire. You're going to be working till you keel over, till you drop dead, because you have to pay for all these freeloaders. The corruption, it's one reason I live in the country. I don't want to live where I can suffocate on the corruption, the stench of it all around. It's terrible. That it's just awful. It's just absolutely terrible. But we got to do. But something. Here's the thing. We're all dying. All these countries, all these Western nations are dying. They're broke. Some of them are spectacularly broke. I said this in my piece for Quadrant. They're fiscally speaking, they're bankrupt. Culturally speaking, they're dead, because to go back to the indoctrination point, we spend not 8 grades, but 28 grades teaching our children to hate their entire civilizational inheritance, right? So they, at best, they emerge in a vacuum. My kid, I noticed this years ago when my own kids were in school, because my youngest came back once and responded to something I said by saying, "You're a regular Thomas Jefferson." And I was impressed, not that he knew Thomas Jefferson, but that somebody in his totally mediocre grade school had taught him about Thomas Jefferson. And then he said to me, "Oh, no, Dad, it's just a line I heard on Looney Tunes." I think Bugs Bunny said it to Elmer Fudd or whatever. So people are... why would you be surprised that every healthy society is a compact between the present and the past and the future? And if you break that compact between the present and the past, you won't have a future, because you just leave. Well, why do people want something else? So if you tell them that your country's the most racist country that's ever existed, why would you be surprised that instead they develop love of climate change science or whatever? People want something. And instead, in this awful, awful, crapped out public education system in American schools, American children are taught to hate America. Canadian schools, Canadian children are taught to hate Canada. UK schools, UK children are taught to hate the UK. It's different, particularly as you move east in continental Europe, but the same pathologies are nesting there. Mark Jensen says, are the walls tumbling? Are the hunters becoming the hunted? It's too good to be true. Please, Mr. Stein, take the wind out of my sails. I'm starting to become hopeful, and I know damned well it's too early for that. Kindly remind me of all the madness and corruption still out there, yet to be done with before such flights of hopeful fancy can be entertained. Help us, Obi-Wan. You're our only hope. I don't really do. That was Rush noticed that. Because Rush occasionally used to say, you know, that he wouldn't be here tomorrow and that Mark Stein will be here and he'll tell you how everything's all going to hell. Rush was one of nature's optimists. I think, you know, in the end, lawfare or whatever you want to call it. And I'm sort of staggered, really. As I said, I've been in some crappy case in the District of Columbia over a 200-word blog post. Everyone's excited now because it's going to be Michael E. Mann who writes the check. I ain't going to be writing any check to him. He's now going to have to write a check to me and to National Review and to Rand Simberg and to the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And isn't that great? No, it isn't. I've lost, what is it now, 13 years. So that's basically a quarter of your entire adult life, if you have a normal life expectancy or whatever it is, particularly with declining life expectancy. And I'll never get that back. And I don't, in the end, you know, as I think I said to, you know, that's a life sentence. I wouldn't get, it's going to be another 10 years. That's the estimate because he's appealed everything. So that'll be 7 years at the lethargic DC Court of Appeals, which is a disgrace. And then we'll be on to the Supreme Court. Who knows who'll be on by then? Maybe Amy Phoney Barrett will be Chief Justice by then. And so that's 23 years in some squish pants country like Canada. If I'd shot Michael Mann on Canadian soil, I'd be out in 7 years. So I've been given what would be a life's 23 years, what would be a life sentence in any other Western nation. And so everything they're doing to Trump, like this thing here, the Supreme Court did over the Easter weekend, where basically it issued an order staying the deportation of any non-citizens, this is any and all of them, in the Northern District of Texas until further notice. And I don't see how they can do that because neither the district court nor the Court of Appeals in the Northern District of Texas had issued anything appealable. So it seems quite obvious to me, and I'm not a law professor, but that the Supreme Court is acting as a court of original jurisdiction, so-called. It's acting as a trial court. It's taken the case. The guy could have gone to the district court. He could have gone to the Court of Appeals. Instead, you can now go directly to John Roberts because he's managed to mysteriously expand the original jurisdiction, which is very tightly constrained by, what's that document you guys are always on? What's it called again? The United States Constitution, is that it? It's right there in Article 3. The original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court couldn't be smaller. And yet, they've now expanded it to say you can't deport any gangbangers. I don't know, where are the legal scholars on all of this stuff? They don't get me started on all that stuff. I'm concerned. I'm not optimistic because the way to bet, I mean, for a start, when you're heading up to $40 trillion in debt or whatever it is, either that means something or it doesn't. But at some point, you know, it will mean something. And then what happens? So this is Trump and Trump's four-year term. Let's assume that the Democrats as is the norm, manage to win the midterms. They may even win it without cheating. I mean, only with like minimal, barely detectable cheating, not the obvious stuff that they pulled in 2020. So Trump only, so the 4-year term effectively is 2 years. And realistically, again, he has to get it all done before the end of this year, because people are going to be calculating on the basis of how they're looking in the midterms next year. So this is the high water point, and he can't get any of this awful. Why? Tell me something. When does the so-called Republican Party leadership in Congress make a useful contribution to the things that afflict us? They're mostly lawyers in there, right? So how come they've got nothing to say about Amy Phoney Barrett and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh joining Roberts and the three lefties for this midnight decision on Good Friday? The odds are tough. And at some point, you're going to have to force the contradictions. Because, you know, one thing that is clear, and people ask me about this Supreme Court decision in the UK saying that a woman is a biological female. And I read a fascinating piece over at the Conservative Woman website saying that this they will sabotage this court decision as they sabotage the popular vote in Brexit. There's been no Brexit. Britain, aside from not being allowed to use the express check-in when you land in France with a non-EU passport, Britain is still yoked to Brussels in every way that matters. So Brexit was subverted because the powers that be in both Brussels and London decided nothing could be permitted to change. Now we see in Washington that the powers that be, again, say nothing can be permitted to change. By the powers that be, I mean just, you know, useless pillocks like Bill Kristol. I don't see why Bill Kristol requires funding from the foreign aid budget. I don't see why Stacey Abrams requires funding from US taxpayers. At some point, if a chief executive who cannot expel either Kristol or Stacey Abrams from the public teat without being tied up in years of lawfare. You know, that's the other thing. You have separation of powers, right? Well, Congress has some powers and it doesn't do anything. It's got a slim majority, but it hasn't legislated any of the Trump agenda yet. So they have powers, but they are disinclined to use them if Trump is in the Oval Office. Then you have the judiciary. They are using their powers at full strength. And then you have the executive branch, which has to have everything it does gone over by some stupid, meretricious, rinky-dink, legalistic lawsuit. So I am... I enjoyed the first couple of months, but we really do need to be able, the executive branch needs to be able to exercise its executive powers without being interfered with on every, the great thing about Trump was that he, with those first executive orders, he did 2,000 different things in the first couple of days, and neither the media nor the Democrats nor the deep state could keep track of them all. Now they're responding in kind by filing thousands and thousands of lawsuits. And instead of Roberts consolidating them into one Supreme Court hearing on the executive branch and redefining them, he's gone over to the lefties and said the United States president, for a start, if you, which is perfectly obvious since point others have made, but if you were to have every MS-13 gangbanger entitled to so-called due process, that would be the end of the courts would be able to do nothing else. And if you add up all the people who are in the country illegally, it would take till the end of the century just to clear the backlog that's here already. So simply as so that old line about the Constitution is not a suicide pact. Right now, Roberts' ruling says, oh, yes, it is. It is a suicide pact. And 7 of the 9 judges agree that it's a suicide pact. Awful. Just bloody awful. I can't stand those guys. I do like Alito because he was... He took the implications of Michael Mann's lawsuit seriously. So I will be delighted in 10 years' time to get it to him on the Supreme Court, if he's still there. He'll be, what will he be? He'll be pushing 90 by then. That's why saying, oh, just let the process play out is bollocks. Because everyone's like, oh, we've got a rock-ribbed originalist majority on the Supreme Court, 6-3. Well, if it takes you 10 years to get to the pissing Supreme Court, who knows who's good? AOC will be on there by then, and Stacey Abrams. So who the hell knows who's going to be on the Supreme Court by then. Hi, Mark, says Joseph Dornish. You were remarking on the Supreme Court's not quite 11th hour, but rather first minute action to rule against the administration. I was wondering if you have thoughts on standing. It seems to me that when the government is doing wild and crazy things to us all, such as flying in violent illegal immigrants and spreading them throughout the country, or paying off student loans for rich kids with social science degrees, working for various government non profits raking in millions of dollars, that no one has any standing to stop them. But deport one wife-beating, human-trafficking, violent MS-13 gangbanger, and Chief Justice Roberts responds with, this administration is reckless and must be stopped. Any hint of process be damned. Yeah, I think by the one wife-beating, human-trafficking, violent MS-13 gangbanger, this is the chap that the American media refers to as a Maryland man. Maryland man should not have been deported. I can assure you that if I were ever to catch the attention of ICE or whatever, it would not say New Hampshire man. So this only goes... You know, as I said, in the world in which we live, this would be, as I have sort of remarked, if I had my life to live over again, I'd devote it to forming a paramilitary organization. I may still devote the time I have left, because if you look at it, these institutions fail the people. There was an election, and the winner of that election campaigned on enforcing U.S. immigration law. It's not that Biden passed any... Biden didn't get Congress to pass a law saying millions and millions of undocumented criminals can come into the country. He did that by declining to enforce existing laws, which is why I generally have contempt. You know, I'm... I'll be shot one day. coming back into America from Canada, because when the chap on the Yank side asks, three or four or five questions, I was, so this is the one part of the border where U.S. immigration law is still enforced? Is that it? And they don't like that, and one day they'll just shoot me, and fair enough, I don't really care about that. Particularly because it would be a blessed release in some ways, but you can't have laws that clearly have malign effect. I mean, don't forget, none of the laws make any sense. We're told it's a pandemic. We're told you can't be a waitress in Manhattan if you haven't had the old jabber-jabber. But at the same time, people pour across the Rio Grande, and nobody tells them to get the jabber-jabber. They're just dispersed into the nation, and they can get jobs. I mean, they don't need to get jobs because everything's given them for free. So clearly, if you had a sane electorate, the electorate would say, well, wait a minute. The government tells me I can't have grandma around for Thanksgiving because of the COVID, but I can have a bunch of MS-13 guys living in the basement because no one cares about their COVID status. You would require some critical thinking on the part of much bigger numbers of the electorate to make that point. I mean, this is why, like, a lot of this stuff is a complete waste of time. Because you can't make arguments with these people. There used to be that, you know, you could have appeals to sentiment in a pop song or a motion picture, but that when someone picked up the newspaper, it would be relatively sane. And now the New York Times, that crappy piece by the fellow who, what's the show? My kid liked it for a couple of years with, what's he called? Larry David. He wrote a thing about comparing Bill Maher having dinner with Trump to somebody having dinner with Hitler. And the new, so this is, that's the level on which public, and there's people, there's all the nice people. All the nice people listening to NPR, all those women who voted for Hillary because it's so excited to have a woman shatter the glass ceiling. Is she any good at it? And instead, they're the people who are destroying, you know, these people are destroying your country. And at some point, they are going to have to get real or get out of the way. That's what people would tell them. I mean, all these people who go on about the American Revolution, as I say, we all know that in the state of the province of New York, I think it was at that time, a majority of the population were loyalists. But it was the people who wanted it who made it happen. Jay Barney says, a poll of Canadians would reveal that more want to live under Sharia law than under American sovereignty. That is true. But that is because in the last 50 years, I think in 1970, there were 13,000 Muslims in Canada. 13,000, coast to coast. That's 1,000 per province and territory, 10 provinces, 3 territories, 13,000. Now there are, in 2020, there are over 2 million, it's probably 3 million by now. So yes, you're right. A poll of Canadians would reveal that more, or a poll of people in Canada would reveal that more want to live under Sharia law than under American sovereignty. I tell you what, I'm hopelessly late because I played that little Biden clip. I got all confused and I've neglected to play the promo for the most important 30 seconds in the show. This is where Mark Stein puts in an appearance. Several people on the cruise told me that they find it rather irritating and passive-aggressive. The way I insist on pretending that Mark Stein is a different person from myself for this next 30 seconds. But here is the one and only, or the two and only, Mark Stein to tell you all about our weekend music show. This is Mark Stein on the town this week. Songs across the century, songs around the world, including the Maguire sisters, Herb Alpert, a monster hit that exacted an awful toll on its authors, a cavalcade of number ones down the decades, and our Sinatra sextet on the town Saturday at 5 on 7-8 Radio. And Saturday at 5 is London time. So that's 6 p.m. in Western Europe or 12 midday North American Eastern. Mark Stein, live around the planet. It is 2 minutes past 4 Eastern time. That's 2 minutes past 9 British summer time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. Shall we get back to your questions? I'm rather enjoying some of them today because we're getting a nice variety. Andrew Down Under says, death of election day, record early voting in Canada for Monday, 28th April election. That's true. Also, record early voting for Australian election on Saturday the 3rd of May. As the saying goes, vote early and vote often. There is no reason for this early voting. You should have to have a reason for it. You should have to say, unfortunately, I'm out of the country for not just to lie on a beach in Barbados, but for something real. That's what you should have to do, and you should have to prove it. Because the reason why Election Day exists is because you require enormous resources if you want to steal an election between polls opening at 8 a.m. and polls closing at 7 p.m. or whatever your particular jurisdiction happens to have. It's difficult. You need warm bodies and you need to have them all over the place if you've only got 11 hours to steal the election. Once you have the present situation, you can steal it unhurriedly. The thing about it is, our ruling class, the globalist ruling class, whether Klaus Schwab comes and goes, are less and less inclined to accept what John Roberts likes to call norms. You know, it's the people's right to vote for whoever they want, whether they are then seated is a different matter. But, for example, even during the so-called Irish Troubles, Sinn Féin were on the ballot. They didn't take their seats at Westminster because they wouldn't take their oath of allegiance to the crown. But nobody suggested that freeborn citizens aren't entitled to vote for whoever they want. And the idea that, for example, there's far more reason that Gerry Adams or Martin McGuinness should have been banged up in a jail cell than Marine Le Pen. But oddly, Sinn Féin now agree with the Uniparty in Britain about more or less everything, except what country they're in. Whereas anyone who wants anything to change is increasingly, you know, judges are saying, oh, no, you can't have that guy on the ballot. You can't have this guy on the ballot. This is a move to something else. And I know in our comments section, we have people like Veronica from New Zealand, who thinks that democracy hasn't really worked out too well. It's, the Western world is dying on democracy's watch, as she sees it. And so we'd be better off trying to come up with something else. And you can make that case, but the trouble is that the something else is tyranny. And it can be, it's at the moment, it's in some countries, as in America, where you basically have a corrupt judiciary that has agreed to cripple the executive branch. So it's tyranny in a sort of slightly disguised form. In Canada, you have judges who have decided to send the organizers of the Canadian truckers to jail. But it will soon be open tyranny. You know, I would like, Pierre Poilievre isn't to my taste. But he is a he is a fairly normal guy and a popular guy, in the way that Stephen Harper wasn't quite the predecessor Tory Prime Minister from a decade ago. The public never quite warmed up to Stephen Harper. I think they could warm up to Poilievre, but he can't. The fact is that he thought it was enough to be not Justin Trudeau. And now Mark Carney is not Justin Trudeau. So that actually teaches a useful, whether you want to blame it on Trump, there'll be time enough for that next week. But that teaches a useful lesson that just being not this guy, anybody can do. You know, the Tories, when they decided they wanted not Boris Johnson, anybody in the UK Tories, that is, anybody can be not the other guy. And in the end, that isn't going to save us. I mean what I say here. You know, I don't channel the Duke of Edinburgh. I don't come here for my health. That's what he said about Canada to some bolshy CBC interviewer. I don't come here for my health. As a matter of fact, my doctors think I should stop doing all this stuff. But the thing is, it should be obvious now that we're going off the bastard cliff. And I've been pointing it out for 20 years. The future, everyone said, oh, you can't make a trend lie. You can't just say only because so many babies were born in Italy in 2006 that it'll be in a total demographic death spiral in 20 years' time. Well, 20 years' time is here, and it is in demographic death spiral. And as I said, right now, we had a question. I can't find it now because for some reason the questions are slow to load at my end. But we had a question that was there a moment ago but isn't so much now. Saying about this rush for war with Iran, and the fact is that if America makes the mistake of going to war with Iran, it will lose, as it lost in Afghanistan and as it lost the proxy war in Ukraine. So we shouldn't be going to war with anyone, and in the case of Iran, the real big geopolitical threats, like China, will be on the side of Iran. It's just not going to work. I mean, this is just total insanity. Total insanity. The way, it's not only that we can't deport some wife-beating gangbanger, but it's also this mad rush by the same people who've lost every bloody war since VJ Day to start up another old Trumbo. Trump's got this thing. He wants to do a deal with Ukraine. So where can we have the next war? Iran. It's crap. America will lose a war with Iran. I know people say that's incredible. It should be incredible when you're responsible for 40% of the planet's military budget. But war is about will and strategic clarity. And most of those buggers under my old friend Pete Hegseth in the Pentagon have neither. Suzanne Rennie says, on another note entirely, I miss your musical interlude. Don't go there. And the 100 years ago segment of the show. Can't have it all, I suppose. We may be bringing back the 100 years ago show. A lot of people, I didn't really realize, but actually both on the cruise and just sort of wandering around, I run into people all the time who say, oh, I really miss the 100 years ago show. It was a great show, and we may try to bring it back in some form. The thing is, it'll all be gone. Because when you lose control of your future demographically, so whether you're going for the crapped-out Islamic Stan model of Europe or whether you're going for the Latin America favela model of Chief Justice John Roberts, your entire past will be obliterated in all that. That's that. As I said, when you lose your future, you also lose your past. Anyone can tell you that. All you, even you boomer rocker types who want me to play more whiter shade of pale or whatever, or Stairway to Heaven or whatever it is. You won't be able to hear that on the radio once Chief Justice Roberts has bulked up your town with a few more gangbangers. Sorry, it's been a bit of a chaotic show. It has been a bit technically difficult for me. As I said, the questions are loading very slowly. But that's going to do it for today. Do stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Thanks for all your kind words about Laura and her family. Everything is shipshape and Bristol fashion, as nobody says anymore. And Laura will be back to round up the internet as only she can on Thursday. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, do come on in. The water's fine, and we have fun in the Mark Stein Club with Tales for Our Time and maybe even a reprise of the 100 Years Ago show. So we got a lot of good stuff that you may enjoy partaking in. And thank you for your kind words, by the way, about the cruise. Next time round, I think it's the Queen Mary 2 from Quebec City, down the St. Lawrence to the Saguenay Fjord with all the whales gaily plashing, and then out through the Gulf and into the ocean and round to Halifax, Nova Scotia, from where the Royal Navy launched the War of 1812 on the United States. I know, yeah, not everybody will be wanting to get off the ship and see all that. But we're going from Quebec City down the St. Lawrence, out into the Atlantic, and then down the eastern seaboard to New York City. And we would love to see you on board. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, as I said, you are welcome. Come on in. The water's fine. Stay safe. Stay free.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.